Good morning.
Good morning.
So right before this, I took a little walk around the building without a coat or a hat because, number one, I wanted some fresh air, but number two, I wanted to feel that I was alive. And, you know, it was just around the building. So I noticed that at first it was fine when I first walked out. And then after about maybe about 30 seconds, I noticed contraction. And then I realized I don't need to contract. I'm not, you know, going to be outside for hours and hours. I'm just walking around the building. So I was cold. I was very cold, but I walked around the building and was relaxed and was alive, and it was wonderful. So it's one of the joys about living in a cold climate, is sometimes you have the weather to help you remember that you're alive. So this is the fifth talk in Rohatsu Sesshin 2017 on the awesome presence of active Buddhas. And this is a really long fascicle. And as I was looking over and preparing for today, I thought, there's no way I can talk about the whole thing. I kind of knew that going in, but so if you have a chance to read it, you might read it. You could even read it like a meditation without knowing.
What number is it?
It has a number.
That's okay.
I did not write down the number.
Okay. That's
okay. So, but it's Gyobutsu Uji. Gyobutsu.
And then Uji.
It's either Y-U-G-I or I-I-G-I, depending on the translation you're looking at. And the numbers, I think, are kind of different depending on what translation you look at, too. At least they seem to be, like, in different orders in the different books. So, anyway. First, I want to apologize for my mistake. Dogen's death poem does not include the line, "One continuous mistake." That is not in Dogen's death poem. And interesting, the line that's attributed to Dogen that I was thinking of is, "A Zen master's life is one continuous mistake." Or in some places, "Life is one continuous mistake." However, when I was looking up this information, what I discovered is that actually Dogen never said that either. But he did say a lot about mistakes, so it's understandable that it could morph into that. That mistake could happen. So in the Eihei Kuroku, he says, "There is the principle of the way that we must make one mistake after another." So that kind of sounds similar to one continuous mistake. And of course, in our fascicle, what I talked about yesterday, he says, "Stepping forward misses, stepping backwards misses, taking one step misses, taking two steps misses." And so there are mistakes upon mistakes. So here it is demonstrated. And if you want to look at a really wonderful blog post about mistakes and being lost, and where I found out about the real truth about this line, you can Google Tracy Franz. It's Tracy without an E and Franz, F-R-A-N-Z. If you Google Tracy Franz, "Here I Am," you'll find the blog post, and it's really wonderful. It's she and her husband, Koan Franz, who I think some people know, who's a Soto Zen. I think they're both Soto Zen priests in Nova Scotia. And they have a blog called One Continuous Mistake before they discovered, I think, that Dogen didn't say that line. And it's on parenting, but it's really, it's on more than parenting. So this one in particular I loved, Here I Am. So I thought about talking about it, but then I'd be talking about that and wouldn't be talking about the fascicle. So maybe another time. Anyway. Since I was looking up or thinking about Dogen's death poem, I thought I would share the actual death poem. And he wrote three death poems. So he was very ill, and, you know, they had their place in the mountain, so he was kind of far away. And his students, and he agreed, encouraged him to go to Kyoto for medical treatment. And he actually, you know, was optimistic that he would go there and get treated and be well. But that did not come to be. So anyway, while traveling to Kyoto, he wrote a couple poems. And then there's the final death poem. So I want to read those. The first one is, like a blade of grass, my frail body, treading the path to Kyoto, seeming to wander amid the cloudy mist on the mountain path. So just really being in touch with his body, I like that part. And being in touch with, you know, old age and sickness. Although he was actually, by our counting, would be 53, but they at the time, and I think even maybe in China today and in Japan at the time, count when the baby's born, it's 1 year old. So they count the years differently. But anyway, old age at 53. And then there's this other next short one. Although I hope to see it once more in autumn, how can I sleep with such a moon this evening? So it's just the love for... and it's beautiful, you know, even though at that point he's still optimistic, I hope to see it, you know, I hope I'll be well, but yet here's this moon. It's beautiful. And there's a bit of a longing for, you know, for life, especially in this one. But then his final, you know, right before he died is his really fully letting go death poem. So here's that one. 54 years lighting up the sky. A quivering leap smashes a billion worlds. Ha! Entire body looks for nothing. Living, I plunge into Yellow Springs. And Yellow Springs means hell. So just like, you know, because there's the idea that, you know, the bodhisattva could go right to hell, because that's where there's the most suffering. So you could just go right to hell and help living beings there. So, yeah. So still living right to the end, but letting go. Very beautiful and inspiring. And actually, it's really related to the next passage. In this fascicle, which is why I decided to share it. So he talks about death, he talks about birth and death. And he asks us to consider what we know about birth and death and what might be beyond our knowledge. And speaking of birth, I would just like to take a moment to wish a happy birthday to Shojin. Do you mind people knowing how old you are?
No, I don't care.
It's a big birthday, 60.
Oh, nice.
So This is sign language for applause, for, you know. So in this fascicle, Dogen talks about, well, at the time, there were thought to be four main types of birth. Womb birth, metamorphosis, so like caterpillar to butterfly, egg birth, and moisture birth, which referred to, I think, like fruit flies or things that were, you know, came alive, you know, little in pond, you know. They didn't realize that they were actually eggs. So I thought it was just moisture. So those were thought to be the four types of birth. So Dogen says there are types of birth beyond the usual understanding of the types of birth. And he says, has it ever been seen, heard, or realized that there are these four types of birth beyond the four types of birth? In the great way of Buddhas and ancestors, it has been intimately and explicitly transmitted that there are four types of birth beyond the usual understanding of these four types of birth. So this would be kind of like going against or science, like at the time, it's like, these are the four types of birth. It's like, no, it's not limited to that. And I didn't have time to look up where it might be that the Buddhas and ancestors intimately and explicitly said that there were. I don't know if they did or if Dogen just saw it that way. I'm not sure. Does anyone else know? And then he goes on to say, how many types of death are there? Are there four types of death for the four types of birth? Or are there two or three types of death? Or are there five or six or 1,000, 10,000 deaths? Yeah, right, yeah. And then he says, now consider whether there are beings among these four types of birth who might only have birth without death. Are there any beings who only transmit death and do not transmit birth? He's really playing with us here. And I think these are really can be avenues for entering the Buddha way for those who like to play in the realm of the mind or maybe need to be shaken up a little in the realm of the mind. So it's a way of, what he's talking about here is a way of exploring beyond our ideas of birth and death, our ideas of who we think we are, what we think the world is about. Dogen says, know that birth and death is the activity of the Buddha way. Birth and death is the furnishings of the Buddha house. Isn't that nice? Someone told me recently that she'd only been to Clouds like three or four times in the past like several years. And each time she came, I was giving the talk, and each time I was talking about death. So she said, maybe that's a sign for me that I should look at this topic more deeply. So she did think that. She said, I don't feel like I'm really adverse to death, but I could look at it more deeply. So it's good. Right after the section in this fascicle where Dogen's urging us to study birth and death beyond our ideas of it, he also admonishes us against being human-centric in our views. So I want to read this part. Some people say that Buddhas only appear in the human realm and think that they do not appear in other realms or worlds. If that were true, all realms would have been human realms when the Buddha was alive. This is like saying that human Buddhas alone are venerable ones. However, there must be Buddhas in the Deva realm as well as Buddhas in the Buddha realm. Those who think that Buddhas only appear in the human realm have not yet entered the inner chamber of Buddha ancestors. So I think most of you know about the teachings about the six realms of existence, and we refer to these in the meal chant. So there's the human realm, there's the heavenly realm or the God realm, and there's the fighting God realm, that, you know, they're not quite God, but they, you know, competition, you know, want to get there. And then there's the animal realm, the hungry ghost realm, and the hell realm. And the teaching around these realms is also that there's a Buddha in each realm. So no, there's no realm that's without a Buddha. So, yeah, yay! Active Buddhas are not human-centric. They're all-inclusive Buddhas. And not only are these active Buddhas in all the realms, the active Buddhas who, remember, are not separate from me and you, active Buddhas are beyond obstruction. So Dogen says, the awesome presence of active Buddhas right now is beyond obstruction. Totally encompassed by Buddhas, active Buddhas are free from obstruction as they penetrate the vital path of being splattered by mud and soaked in water. So this is right in the middle of our muddy, mucky life. So this is it. This is active Buddhas. As we swear at others and are sworn at, as we get angry and annoyed with others, as we feel our strong love for others, as we try our best but still make mistakes, sometimes hurting ourselves by our mistakes and sometimes hurting others, as we never live up to our idea of who we think we should be, the awesome presence of active Buddhas right now is beyond obstruction. No amount of mud and muck and mistakes and tragedies and love and heartaches can obstruct them. I thought about the motto of the U.S. Postal Service. Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. Active Buddhas will not be stopped. About the postal service?
No.
Oh.
Okay.
The Dogen line was way before, because the other stuff was me. So the Dogen line was, the awesome presence of active Buddhas right now is beyond obstruction. Totally encompassed by Buddhas. Active Buddhas are free from obstruction as they penetrate the vital path of being splattered by mud and soaked in water. We have kind of a line at our house when we're feeling, you know, sort of all discombobulated, say, I'm a wet mess. So it's like that. Or sometimes I've heard this line translated, you know, splattered by mud and dripping wet. You know, just like, ugh. But it doesn't, that's okay, because that's not an obstruction. And that's the vital path of being splattered by mud and soaked in water. So that's, again, like the mistake after mistake that we, is our life that we have to do. I was thinking about that for, like, chanting. So, chanting too high is a mistake, chanting too low is a mistake, and chanting just right is a mistake. So, we just make the mistake. And, you know, we can aim for making the mistake of just right, but don't forget that it's a mistake, too. Or then you really get tripped up. So maybe this is hard to really grok, though, that idea, this idea that mistakes are, well, not only not an obstruction, but the vital path. Because you might still doubt that the real you, the concrete you, that which Buddhas guard and desire, you might doubt that that's the awesome presence of active Buddha. You might doubt that you are the awesome presence of active Buddha. And if you do doubt that, here's another line from Dogen. He says, "The present unrestricted state of the dignified behavior of acting Buddha is toes wiggling inside the sandals of acting Buddha." In other words, it's nothing special. Can you wiggle your toes inside your sandals? Okay, you're in. Dogen continues, "Sometimes it is the sound of a fart and the whiff of a shit. Those who have nostrils are able to smell it. With organs of hearing, organs of the body, and organs of action, they hear it." So do you think you can't see or understand the awesome presence of active Buddhas? It's right here. When you use the bathroom, it's right there. And I think he says this too, just in case you're someone who can't really get into the mystical nature of a Buddha in every realm throughout space and time. Like, okay, if you're not into that, then, okay, toes wiggling in the sandals and a fart. All right, I'll give you that one. I think he's saying, don't worry. You can just practice in the muck and mud of your life and the world and open to this. And if it's too hard or too much or too mucky, then you can open to other things that are happening. So I often give that instruction, like you can be present with the difficulties, you know, bring them here, be with them, and then if that's too much, then you be present with your too muchness and you do loving kindness. Or you remember, well, what is positive? Is there something positive right now? Is there something nurturing? Is there something I'm grateful for? Or thinking about what is the one good thing that you've done or that's been done for you. So that is also the awesome presence of active Buddhas. We don't just have to focus on the mud and the soaking wet. Dogen says, "In regard to freely penetrating the great way that completes birth and death, that completes birth and masters death, there is an ancient statement. A great sage surrenders birth and death to the mind, surrenders birth and death to the body, surrenders birth and death to the way, surrenders birth and death to birth and death. As this teaching is actualized without limitation in the past and present, the awesome presence of active Buddhas is thoroughly practiced immediately." So I want to say a little bit about my understanding of these sentences about surrendering birth and death. So I think surrendering birth and death to the mind, there's a couple ways that can go. One is just contemplating it. So surrendering birth and death to the mind is bringing it up, thinking about it, which is maybe why I talk about death so much, because it's a very direct path to opening to the Buddha way. But it also can be surrendering birth and death to the mind is noticing the mind being born and dying. So noticing, you know, thought that arises and dies, and, you know, train of thought that arises and dies, and ideas that come up and go away, and just noticing that. Just surrendering birth and death to the mind in that way. And surrendering birth and death to the body is noticing the body. So we've had some body awareness meditations. Noticing the body itself, and then also noticing the body being born and dying in each moment, like each breath. Breath is born and it dies. And you can notice it in when you get sick and then when you get better. You can, you know, just notice things being born and dying as you go through your life. Surrendering birth and death to the body. And then surrendering birth and death to the way, to the Buddha way, would be, I think, contemplating the Dharma teachings, especially on impermanence, the Four Noble Truths, no self, and even just breath meditation. And then surrendering birth and death to birth and death. And that's just letting it be, letting birth and death be birth and death. And really what Dogen is saying is great sages don't worry about birth and death. They receive it in these different ways. They surrender to it. Dogen says, the teaching of birth and death, body and mind, is the circle of the way and is actualized at once. Thoroughly practicing, thoroughly clarifying, it is not forced. So I often tell people, don't force yourself to do a practice you're not ready for. And not forced doesn't mean no effort. So you should actually invite yourself to go right up to your edge of what you can do. What can you take up as a practice? Can it be this? And then if so, then you let it flow. So there's that effort and then letting it flow. So yesterday someone shared an image with me about effort as like this gentle tap on a ball to start it rolling. So there's effort, but you're not like dragging the ball across the floor. It's just like this. Still, when we're going against our deeply ingrained patterns, initiating that gentle tap can feel like our hands under a boulder. You know, so it can feel like, oh, how can I start this? How can I initiate this? But the effort itself, once we're able to, you know, somehow extract our hand from the boulder, or maybe realize that the boulder isn't actually there, and it's just easy. So this effort of and this doing this practice of going to our edge, so this is in our Zazen practice and also in our interpersonal relationship practice. So the practice is being exactly who we are, and this is maybe where the effort comes in, not limiting ourselves by who we think we are. So we are exactly who we are, and not allowing ourselves, maybe that's the effort, not allowing ourselves to be limited by our idea of who we think we are, or who others think we are, or what we think about who others think we are. And how that works, how that practice works, Dogen says, it is just like recognizing the shadow of deluded thought and turning the light to shine within. So that reminds me of one of my favorite jokes about the man who's looking for his lost keys. Maybe you've heard this one. So he's at night and he's under a street lamp looking for his lost keys, and another passerby comes by and says, "What's going on? I lost my keys." "Oh, can I help you?" Okay, so then they're both looking and looking, and they look all around and they're not finding the keys. So finally the passerby says, "Do you remember like where you were standing when you lost them?" And he said, "Yeah, I was standing over there, like in the dark." He said, "Well, why are we looking here?" He said, "Well, the light's better here." So I think sometimes we're like that, you know. We want to stay like in our comfort zone. The light's better here. So what I recommend is that, and what Dogen is saying, is take that flashlight and shine it. He's saying shine it inward to expose your own delusions and shadows. So what that might look like practically, not metaphorically, is trying things that are new to you, new ways of thinking, new ways of acting with others, new ways of being with yourself in zazen, like sleeping, for example, if you're tired, being a sleeping Buddha. Or if you're someone who feels like I'm not good at concentrating, say, well, do I need to limit myself to that idea about me? And can I proceed in the direction of not limiting myself while at the same time not measuring how I'm doing? Yeah, that's tricky. All right, I want to read something from Tigan Dan Leighton about this. So he repeats this phrase from Dogen. "It is just like recognizing the shadows of deluded thoughts and turning the light to shine within. So please study your delusions. Do not turn away from the shadows." This is what Buddhas do, not turning away. Deluded people have delusions about enlightenment and awakening and majestic Buddhas. Practicing Buddhas, active Buddhas, are actually awakened about their delusions. So just see the delusions. Tigan says, "Do not be afraid of your fear or your craziness. It is not possible to be truly sane in this corrupt, crazed society. If you were sane, that would be really crazy. Please study your own difficulties. Please study your own grasping and anger and frustration and confusion. That is what Buddhas do. That is the dignified presence of active Buddhas. Please study your own addictions and your own shadows and difficulties. It is just like recognizing the shadow of deluded thought and then turning the light to shine within." That's the basic instruction, basic zazen instruction. As Dogen says in the Fukan Zazengi, take the backward step, turn your light inwardly to illuminate the self. I think that's a little different than our translation, but the basic thing, turn the light inward to illuminate the self. What we do sitting on our cushion is to study the self. Of course, studying the self is forgetting the self, but do not try to forget the self. Do not run away from yourself or become somebody other than the person on your cushion right now. Everything you need is right here, now, in this skin bag. Just turn the light to shine within and don't turn away. Take another breath. And then exhale. Be willing to be the person you are and face the wall of yourself. This is the practice of active Buddhas. Isn't that great? Dogen says, to understand the meaning of totally surrendering, you should thoroughly investigate the mind. In the steadfastness of thorough investigation, all phenomena are the unadorned clarity of the mind. I'm going to say that again. In the steadfastness of thorough investigation, all phenomena are the unadorned clarity of the mind. Although your knowing and understanding are part of all phenomena, you actualize the home village of the self. This is none other than your everyday activity. That's also pretty great. You actualize the home village of the self. So, thoroughly investigate your mind. Notice how your own mind works and what it holds dear. Do you want to be seen as smart? Or maybe you're someone who emphasizes being seen as kind, or as a good person, or a generous person, someone who treats others fairly, or maybe you want to be seen as someone who doesn't get taken advantage of. Notice what happens in your mind when reality pokes a hole in any one of those images, when something comes up to say, oh, you're not that. You're not only that. That's not the only thing you are. So notice how the mind wants to grab on and does a bunch of stuff to, you know, to support that. Or maybe the hole was really big. The hole that got poked was really big. And then notice how the mind deflates and now holds a negative image. And if that happens, don't succumb to shame. It's really important. Just notice. This is what's happening. Thoroughly investigate. Notice this is what the mind does. Everyone's mind does this. Make friends with it. Practice total relaxation with it. That's when a transformation can take place that's not forced. That's when you actualize the home village of the self. So where is your true home? The home village of the self. Dogen says it's right here in your everyday activities. So that's pretty much all I got. But I will.
Yeah.
What's that? I just completely spent. Yeah, I didn't cover everything, but it's all I got. Like I said, it's a long fascicle. So, yeah. But if there's questions, we do have a little bit of time. If there's questions or comments, so, Shojin.
It reminds me of a Rumi poem. Everything reminds me of Rumi. But there's one where he says, keep looking at the wounded place, because that's where light enters you.
Nice.
There's a book called The Spirituality of Imperfection. And one of the stories is that when we're all suspended by strings from heaven, and when you make a mistake, the string is cut. And then God ties the strings together, and so you're closer.
Oh.
You're higher up.
Oh. Yeah. That does really fit with what Dogen is talking about with the mistakes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because this all happens in our bodies, our actual body, some imaginary body. So today I had a lot of anxiety about being unemployed and not having a job, and many stories about just huge, you know, and so I was just sitting with that, and then I thought, I need to lay down. I just need to rest. You know, but because, like, this teaching is helpful because it was so clear that, like, I don't need to sit here and just, you know, now I just need, like, so the period just before this, I just, even though I had, like, this aspiration, I'm going to sit every period of the session, which is great, but I was like, no, I need to wake up.
Yeah.
And then I woke up, you know, and then I was awake, you know. It's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just think when it's, there's a wisdom about this teaching of, like, what else to say about
it? No, that's good. I've noticed, too, with the body that sometimes if I'm feeling agitation or anxiety, you know, anyway, like that, if I lie down on my stomach, that's, you know, it's like, it's just releasing it into the earth. Right, of course, in any position is good if you need to rest. But
and I invited myself to thoroughly rest.
Yeah,
You know,
Right, yeah. That's why, to me, like, sometimes when I lay down on my stomach, it feels like I'm just completely surrendering in a way that's different from laying in another position. I don't ever sleep on my stomach. That, I know some people do, but anyway, so, but for me it's, and I thought about too, because I did it today actually before the Dharma talk, before I walked outside, and I thought about how in the Catholic priest ordination ceremony, that's what they do at one point in the ceremony, they're completely on the floor, on their stomach, you know, completely, it's not a bow like this, it's complete, full prostration. You know, surrender. Yeah, it's a posture of surrender. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So, about the stomach on the ground, can you speak up?
I'm sorry.
About the stomach on the ground, that is the first reflex that we have when we're born. It's called the labyrinthine reflex. And it's that grounding with mother, with the baby on them. That's how deep and profound you just found, because it's naturally there to restore. So I just wanted to throw a little science at it. That's the kind of movement science. And then I've been thinking about Chao Chu. He says, conceiving is ill. You know that? Conceiving is ill. What's his other name?
Joshu?
Joshu. Yeah. Conceiving is ill. And I've just been like, oh my God. He's right. And it just keeps going on.
It's like the mistakes.
I mean, it's just, oh, so yesterday I was going, stop! Stop! I mean, I know that's not practical. I was like, oh my God, I'm so ill. And I'm not talking about like when you're following a train of thought. I'm just talking about, so when we're sitting and thinking, then conceiving stops. It starts again, but then it stops. So there's a wonderful, what is that birth and death thing? Thinking, we are not. And it's not just nothing. I mean, it's not an abstract void. And then, I'm very sensitive to how our internalization of language plays. Strange, twisted, interesting
brocades. And the simplicity of it. And thankfully, the brocade just sort of can fall away.
But then also thankfully that, you know, it comes back, right? Because otherwise, I'm thinking about, anyway, well, interesting that it comes back, because that's the life, mistake after mistake. So we can thoroughly let go. And like you said, when there's no activity of the mind, then we are not. But then, boop.
It's not just the coming up. There's this innate tendency. It's even before the eye is formed that kind of wants to get to grasping, but just inclining to grasping. That's what he meant. Not that things coming up is ill, but that.
Yeah.
That's the mistake after mistake.
Actually, I'd like to point out that that's kind of a Western way to think. It's kind of Kantian. If I think, therefore I am.
Yeah.
And it's actually, Thich Nhat Hanh does a wonderful flipping that on its head, where it's, I think, therefore I'm not.
That's great.
And I like that because I think we're pretty programmed to think that I, therefore I am, and that's a creation of the self, and it kind of leads you in a, already kind of puts you in a box, in a way.
That's the limitation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't really exist. The limitation doesn't, except momentarily, maybe.
Is this your mind?
Well, it might be there, but it's not an obstruction.
I guess what I'm pointing out is we are a product of our culture and our training. And that's all. That's all I'm really trying to say.
And let's not limit ourselves to that.
Yeah.
You can go further than that. There's a thing called the worship here hypothesis. It says language reflects culture and culture reflects language. That the idea for humans, I think, that language is so primary that we don't exist without it. You know, that, and the Judeo-Christian heritage is full of that metaphor.
Here's another thing. I heard this once on the radio, and I never could find it. These linguists who are very interested to study the, and I'm very interested in this, like the arising of, language, period, said that it reflects the structure of the brain. That's what's going on. That just like blew my mind. I went,
That language reflects the structure of the mind?
Of the brain.
And I was like, oh, sure, okay. I mean, it's just like a tree. It's just reflecting tree-ness.
Tree-ness? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. A tree is just... So here's a human
And then it's
Buddha.
Not a problem.
It's really not a problem. It's not like we have to fix it. It's just that's what's going to happen. You know, because it's all reflecting each other. No problem.
Yeah.
That really was so cool.
And the thing about, it's not something we have to fix. I will say the thing that it was reminding me of is there's a short story by Ursula Le Guin. I actually can't remember the name of it, but in the story, this couple finds a rent control apartment in New York City, and it has this magical quality, which is when they do meditation, and when they're meditating and touching each other, then time stops. So, like, they can, you know, hang out, and then, you know, they touch each other, and then whatever, you know, so they're there, and then when they stop, it's just, no time has passed. So they're like noticing this, it's kind of cool, and so they get more and more into it, and so finally they decide, well, we're really going to, you know, do this. So they sit like Zazen, back to back, and like this. And the next day, the landlord comes in and finds skeletons.
Oh, wow.
So it was, it's like, to me, it's like a warning, like, what are you doing? You know? So it's like a warning of, you know, don't like go for this no self without realizing the whole beautiful scope of it, which is the vital path of being splattered with mud and soaking wet. What is that? What is that vital path of being splattered with mud and soaking wet? How can we walk in that way? And it's not about either discarding all of the insights around, yeah, looking at how we grasp. I mean, that is really important to see how that activity happens. But if it's the structure of the mind as well, we're not trying to get rid of it. We're just being who we are completely. Real you, concrete you. All right? Yeah.
Chose to talk about, and just how pertinent it's been to me, and giving me courage to take that flashlight, because I thought I'd done tons of flashlighting.
Well, you probably have, you know. Yeah, you've done a lot.
But I don't know. It's really kind of interesting. There's places that I was excluding, not looking at, or, well, that doesn't count. And it just kind of hit me, you said over and over again, that it's every single part of us. And that's just what's the word, revolutionary for the way I think of things. It's the totality. No part of me is left out. And that's just stunning to me. So this has been really helpful.
I'm glad. Okay, I think that's enough. Thank you.
May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.